Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. Over 180,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. For you, the listeners of Book Geeks Uncompromised, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. This week, I want to recommend Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams.
Good book.
Good book. Classic, I believe, from the 50s?
Oh, I don't remember when it originally came. It was originally a radio broadcast.
Right. It was originally a radio broadcast. It's one of the few older books that I actually thoroughly enjoy. Fun space adventure, extremely goofy. It's a good time. You find the answer to life and everything as well.
You do. It's quite surprising.
To download your free audiobook today, don't forget to go to audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. That is audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. Welcome to Book Geeks Uncompromised.
The entire series.
I don't know what it was about this book. I loved it so much.
How do I know more about it than you do? And it's your number
one
book.
I'm bad with names, okay?
Spoilers, gosh.
And we are ready for some reading.
When in doubt, be lame.
Everyone buckle in.
Welcome back to Book Geeks Uncompromised. This is episode 86, where we make reading less solitary. I am Danny here with Greg, and
Hello.
This week we are talking about The Sword in the Stone by T.H. White, which is the first book in the Once in Future King series. Which, you might have noticed, last week we said we were reading The Once in Future King, and then we started reading that first book, The Sword in the Stone, and we're like, maybe just this first one. Just when we get to that point, that review is going to be kind of short.
Yep.
Just, there's not a whole lot to say about it. I do want to talk about it. There's just not a whole lot to say.
Yeah,
and for when we get there.
Yeah,
that's gonna be kind of the last like 5-10 minutes of the episode. It's not gonna be as long as our normal reviews are.
It's not gonna be as long because it just we'll get there.
We're not gonna review it now.
But
wanted to apologize in advance
for the short review.
It's going to be
right.
So I did have a thing that happened to me this week that my husband does not understand why he's in trouble.
Uh-oh, what did he do?
So I borrowed a friend from my book from my friend a few weeks ago. Mm. It's Lullaby, I think, by Amanda Hawking. It was like the second book in the series about sirens and mermaids and stuff. Mm. And I finished reading King of Assassins. Man, I cannot get my stuff straight. Anyways, King of Assassins by R.J. Barker. I finished reading it yesterday. I was like, all right, what's next up on my reading list? Let's do a total 180 and switch to sirens. And I guess it's not like a really light book, but it's different. Very different. Anyways, I knew exactly where I had left it on my bookshelf. I can't find it. So I spent like 10 minutes just freaking out, searching all over the house, looking for it. And like, I know I didn't move it anywhere, but maybe I moved it here. Couldn't find it anywhere. So eventually I asked Jordan, did you see something like fall off on my bookshelf or something? Did you move it somewhere else? If it fell off, because I know the kids sometimes try to mess with my bookshelves. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, is that this one? I'm like, yes. He was using it to prop up his floor lamp so that he could have better lighting for his game streaming. And he doesn't understand why he's in so much trouble.
Wow.
Yeah.
There are other books we could recommend for that. You could do that. There's books we'd be okay with that happening to. But
yeah. And of course, he had to pick the one book that I'm borrowing from somebody else,
right,
too. So it's even worse.
Exactly.
It's like she's not going to want to loan stuff to me anymore because you're going to try to ruin her books.
It's weird. There's a ring on top of this one. Why is there that on the cover? Oh, no reason.
I thought you wouldn't notice. Well, you sure picked the wrong book for that.
Oh, that's good. I didn't have anything crazy book related this week. Mostly just reading our book and just work. My week was very uneventful. Not so exciting as such.
Yeah. That's okay. Nice, slow, boring weeks are fun too. At least nobody tried to ruin books that you borrowed.
That is true. No one did. And I also wasn't poisoned by books.
I was like, wait a minute, why would you be? Your story.
I'm okay. Leaving. It was a segue. I was trying to be cool and smooth there. There was a story that came out. This was posted back on the 5th of July. But apparently a university in, I think it's the University of Southern Denmark.
Okay.
Library collection, they found that they contained three books, or the covers were covered in arsenic. They were books from the 16th and 17th century books. They were trying to study the books. From this article I was reading, they were trying to study the books. They were looking at them, and they had some kind of green paint-looking stuff on the front of it. And so while they were testing it to try to figure out a way to clean the paint off without ruining the book, they found out it was arsenic. That was just on the covers. I don't think it covered the whole cover, but it was on parts of it, and it was covering up text and such. But yeah, they'd just been sitting in the library for who knows how long, and as they were testing it, they found out that, yeah, sure enough, it was arsenic, and... They aren't 100% sure why. I know they said there was, I was looking at the article here, it was a plot of a book. There was somebody that was killing people that way by putting arsenic in the pages of a book, and every time they'd lick their finger to move a page.
Oh, that was in one of the books? That was the story?
Not theirs. No. Different story, sorry.
Okay.
Different story that this article referenced.
Okay.
But that would be funny if it was. That would be funny if the book talking about people getting poisoned by arsenic
had like arsenic. Poisoning the readers.
But they, from what they determined, they don't think anything malicious was done with these books.
That's less exciting.
Yeah, unfortunately. No plots were discovered. Most likely their reasoning was to keep away vermin and insects from the books. Because back around the time those books were made, arsenic, also called, I think this was called Paris Green, was apparently popularly used in a lot of things to kill insects and rodents and to ward things away. They didn't think about it killing themselves. So until it was later realized,
hey, this will kill all the rodents
and us.
We will never have to touch it though.
So just thought it was interesting that they found more books like that. That who knows how many people have touched them and moved them and didn't even realize. Yeah, you're touching poison.
Yeah.
Good times.
This week's episode of why did people several hundred years ago not live as long.
There you go. Why do we live to 100 now?
Yeah, is it really modern medicine or
stupidity?
I don't know. I think we have our own fair share of stupidity. Oh, now. Oh, like 100%. that has not been solved by any means.
Oh no. We have plenty of it.
We have plenty of it. Oh, the what? One exciting thing I figured you would be happy about was there is a Brandon Sanderson card game.
Yes, I'm in.
Based on the Stormlight Arc. I'm in. Okay, so let's see. In fall 2019, Brotherwise Games will release Call to Adventure Stormlight.
Ooh.
In this hero crafting game, you'll set a character on the path to becoming a Knight Radiant. Players compete to acquire traits, gain allies, face challenges, and build the character that best fulfills their destiny. In Call to Adventure, enduring enslavement or taking on a ward can be as important to your final score as defeating an enemy shardbearer. Victory is point-based, but the game encourages storytelling along the way.
Yes, please.
This game will use the Call to Adventure game system, which is currently wrapping up a successful Kickstarter. The team here at Dragonsteel have had a chance to play and really enjoyed it. It's a fun game with unique mechanics and beautiful art.
That is awesome. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah. I saw some other people, like, I hadn't heard of the Call to Adventure stuff, but I saw some other people talking about it. They weren't as crazy about it, but I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, I don't either. It's more of just, I want to be in the Stormlight Archive world.
Right. I want to be a Knight Radiant.
I want to be a Knight Radiant. It's what I want.
I did not know this, but I know we've played Boss Monster.
Yeah.
The game where, like, you play, like, the bad guy in a dungeon, and, like, some of the cards are the heroes that have to make their way through your dungeon. You set traps and stuff for them.
To try to kill them.
Yeah, to try to kill them. In one of the expansions, Brandon Sanderson is... one of the heroes.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's an epic hero cleric. Yeah, it's called Brannadin Wordblessed. And his description is, this cosmic chronicler travels tirelessly from world to world, inscribing each people's history and magics on plates of copper. He never stops writing except to battle the forces of darkness.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I thought you would enjoy that.
I want that card.
Yes.
That is really cool, though. I'm looking forward to the game as well. That sounds like something that'll be fun and interesting to play. I hope.
Well, I didn't realize this. The people that are making it, Brotherwise, they're the same people that made Boss Monster.
Oh, okay. So it's something he already has kind of a reputation with.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So obviously the people at Brotherwise enjoy his work. So.
All right. Well, no, that's cool. I'm definitely looking forward to that game. I hope it comes out well. I hate I have to wait a year for it.
A whole year. I mean, it'll go by faster than you think.
Oh, it'll fly by. It'll be here, and I'll be super excited and not being able to understand it. Soon, because it's complicated card games. They are awesome, but I get so lost so often because it's like, wait, how do I play?
Yeah, there's definitely a learning curve.
Yes,
with all of the board games, it's like it's not Monopoly or Candyland anymore.
No.
It's so much more complicated, and they're fun.
Yeah,
once you figure it out, but there is definitely a learning curve.
There's a game that I would love to introduce to the gaming podcast, the gaming show. Called Eldritch Horror, that's based on all of the, you know, old Eldritch,
right,
know, Cthulhu, right. and that such type stuff. And the game is fun. It is ridiculously fun, but it is so complicated at the same time on how you do things.
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to play it. I don't want to take the time to explain it.
Right.
I guess moving on towards book stuff, before I get way off the handle.
Right.
award-winning artist Julie Dillon, I think I pronounced that right, Dillon, is kickstarting a book of gorgeous sci-fi and fantasy art.
Okay.
She is a rising star in the science and fiction fantasy community. Her gorgeous artwork has appeared in everything from covers of novels from publishers such as Tor Books, Angry Robot, and Penguin,
okay,
as well as magazines such as Clark's World, Lightspeed, and Uncanny Magazines. So she's decided to basically she's kickstarting a new art book called Daydreamer's Journey. It's a retrospective of the art she's produced over the course of her career. So basically, she's going to put in a bunch of art she's done, a bunch of sketches she's done, a bunch of like unfinished drafts and stuff.
Nice.
So just kind of showing her process and how she does things. And she says here, so you can see, where'd it go? So you can see part of my painting and brainstorming process. It's just kind of a big artwork book that she's doing on Kickstarter right now. And I just thought that was really cool because some of the artwork I've seen for fantasy and sci-fi novels are fantastic. I mean, I always go on about the Kings of the Wild series, their two books have gorgeous covers.
I mean, the artwork for a book is, I think, the first thing that draws somebody in.
Oh, 100%.
So, I mean, it's very important for it to be well done, and the more astounding it is.
Yeah, it's got to grab their attention from the beginning because that's a lot of people do just shelf shop, I guess is the word.
When there are so many books on the shelf, like you have to look for something that grabs your attention. So when it's not as exciting of a cover,
exactly,
it's not going to grab as much attention, but then it also has to capture what the story is about as well. So it's an interesting balancing act that I know that I could not manage.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, you've got to get it just right to grab those viewers, to grab the readers. It's definitely interesting. I see there's one piece of her artwork here on the article I'm looking at, and it's pretty. It's gorgeous. I would love to at least see the artwork. I can show it to you. It's that right there. It's a
That is nice.
Yeah, it's a woman like standing on top of flying sea turtles. I'm sure that's something sci-fi related. That fits fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I think that's really cool. I love seeing art books. I always mention Critical Role because I'm obsessed. They've done an art book, and they just announced, actually, the night before this podcast, they announced their second one. That's all fan-made art. That's all they got a bunch of fans, a bunch of artists from the community, and they got their best pictures, and they put them all into big, giant books. But that's what I love about this kind of stuff with her Kickstarter. I love seeing cool artwork based off of amazing stories. It's always cool to go online and find those desktop backgrounds for your favorite books and series. Like I found one for the Stormlight Archive of Kaladin and Shallan trapped in the chasm and the chasm fiend standing over them.
Yeah. I remember seeing that.
Oh, it's beautiful. So I love that stuff when I can see my favorite stories and stuff brought to life in artwork.
The final news story that I have this week was a little bit of controversy started by, I'm not going to say it's not her fault. Like, I'm totally on her side about it.
Is it Cocky Gate again?
It's not Cocky Gate, no.
Okay.
No, but author N.K. Jemisin, she tweeted something to the effect, and I wrote a bunch of it down. So she said, every time I see another mediocre Europe-based fantasy, I think of how many brilliant non-European fantasies got rejected to make room for it.
Yeah.
It's not a zero, and I'm kind of breaking up. It was a long tweet thread. I'm kind of picking and choosing quotes, and then I'll kind of sum it up. It's not a zero-sum game. There's actually room for both. The argument essentially was just saying that publishers tend toward safer books with familiar elements, and those tend to be, for fantasy, a lot of times based on like a Western Europe medieval feel.
Yeah.
So publishers kind of tend to go with those, even though it may not be as good as a book or series that tries something new or takes inspiration from a different culture.
Right.
So in effect, this edges out a lot of people of color. So people of color have to work harder to be excellent to get publishing deals, while those that are based on the safer Western Europe medieval fantasy don't have to be as good, because they'll sell more just based on what they are, or publishers are less willing to take a chance, or more willing to take a chance on those. It's less of a risk, I guess.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You think about it, when you think fantasy, you think a knight with a shield on fighting a dragon.
Right.
That's what you think of fantasy when fantasy comes out. So I totally get the publishers trying to go with the thing that they think is going to make them more money.
Yeah.
When in reality, a fresh news story from another perspective, such as a great example is both Jade City and The Poppy War.
Mm-hmm.
Those are both fantasy novels in a different setting than your usual fantasy.
I'm going to throw in, The City of Brass 2 by S.A. Chakraborty. That one was based on Egyptian mythology, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I almost said Brenton Weeks, but I know it's not Brenton Weeks. Peter V. Brett. I was going with the... And I'm bad about their names. But the other group, they are more of a Middle Eastern setting.
Yeah, but at the same time, the main setting is very Western European 100%. Medieval. So 100%. That one halfway.
Yeah, I was giving it credit for at least the Middle Eastern feel.
Yeah.
But, I mean, these books have come out and have shown that you can do fantasy in other settings than Knights and Dragons or foresty, you know what I mean, mountains and castles. And
so the controversy was basically people taking offense to that. Oh, but I love my Western European based fantasy.
Great. You have a lot of them.
Yeah, and that's what she came back and said, was like, I'm not that's the whole point. I'm not saying that those don't have a place in fantasy, but there should be room for other things too.
Exactly.
We can have both. That's the whole point. If it's not a zero-sum game.
There is more than enough Western European fantasy novels out there to last a lifetime.
Yeah, and it's not to say those shouldn't continue to be published, but if you want new stories, I mean, eventually they're going to have to come from other places.
Yeah.
Because if you have the same setting over and over again, you're going to have the same story over and over again, told with just small variations.
Exactly. Yeah, and the... And these stories that come out where the magic is either overly complicated or not explained happens. And we're going to get disinterested, as I have with many fantasy novels. So, I fully agree with her. I'm fully down for getting to see other cultures, getting to see other viewpoints, different ways of looking at fantasy. Like I said,
just exploring,
Poppy War was huge.
Exploring things that we already enjoy in different settings based on different cultures. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah, and me being loving history as it is, like I said, Jade City and Poppy War made me want to get more into looking at the Chinese Eastern culture and their history and stuff. Because those books opened my eyes to those, how cool they can be and how interesting they can be.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm 100% down for it.
That's it for news this week. Yeah, so we are going to review The Sword in the Stone by T.H. White. And this is like the quintessential,
this is
Western European.
We just got one about a story.
We're reading it as a classic, though.
It is a classic.
It is a classic. It's The Sword and the Stone. It's King Arthur.
That is actually kind of hilarious.
Go us.
That was great timing.
Fantastic.
Leading into the
man,
the main Western European story that most stories are based off of.
Hey, we need more stories from other cultures. Now let's talk about King Arthur.
Hey, here's King Arthur. Is there a black guy in here? Nope.
Not a one.
Oh, yeah, that's good. All right. Okay. So please read the very long and detailed synopsis.
Okay, the super long synopsis for The Sword and the Stone, the first book in the Once and Future King series. The extraordinary story of a boy called Wart, ignored by everyone except his tutor Merlin, who goes on to become King Arthur.
All right, I think that's enough. We don't need to tell any more. It's already too long.
Okay, so
that was the actual synopsis. That was it.
Yeah, that's all that's on Goodreads. That is all that is on Goodreads, because the copy that I have is the Once and Future King, so it's all four books wrapped up into one. Yep. So this is just the story on Goodreads.
Yeah.
I would strike out the extraordinary.
Yeah.
I just, okay, so I honestly don't even know what to talk about with it. It's, you know, a much older version of fantasy than we're used to.
Yeah.
It's much the sword and sorcery.
Yeah, I want to say the original was 1938.
Something like that.
I think when the original came out. You know, it's...
And the version that we read is actually the 1958 version. Like, it was revised.
It was revised, yeah. Yeah, with this story, it's definitely, and it's your bread and butter boy becomes powerful, yeah. You know, and that's because it was, you know, it's probably the original most are based off of.
No, King Arthur goes back way further than this.
Oh, I know King Arthur goes back a lot farther. This book was an interpretation of the Arthur legend.
Mm.
So, I mean, but the King Arthur legend is what a lot of fantasy novels are based off of.
Yeah, no, this book... read honestly like it was mostly short story adventures kind of cobbled together into one book, because it was, you know, if you've seen the Disney movie, there was the whole scene where the wart and Merlin turn themselves into fish and are swimming around the moat. There was the whole thing with Madame Mim, but none of it ever felt like it tied back into one story.
It was just a collection.
Yeah, it was just one small adventure after another.
Yeah, for sure. This book goes with other classic novels for me of all kinds. I am not a big fan of classic novels. They're usually too slow for me. I just usually can't stick with them, and this is another example of it. I thought because it was King Arthur I'd be more into it, and I thought I'd enjoy it more, but it just started off slow and it just felt slow the whole time for me. I struggled to get through it.
Now I like the last section where he's pulling the sword out of some, I guess, spoil, I don't know if it's spoilers count. You've probably seen the sword.
You've probably
stone.
Seen
I'm not
the,
spoiling
yeah.
anything
not
for you.
Really, no.
Anyway, so yeah,
hey,
the whole sword
King
the
Arthur
stone,
becomes king.
Yeah, Ward is King Arthur. I liked that last couple of scenes there with that. That felt very King Arthur like, but getting to that point was not fun.
No.
I mean, it shows its age. There were lists. Oh, good gracious, the lists. Like the first time the wart meets Merlin, he's in Merlin's little hut in the woods, and it's just this really long list of all this random stuff in Merlin's cottage. And I just don't care.
Yeah, it almost got as bad as 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea with I saw this, and then I saw this, and then I saw this a little bit.
And then when they do the magic spells, it's like, you know, sing a little rhyme, snap your fingers, and bam, whatever you want is done.
Yeah.
Which, you know, fine. I totally expect that.
Yeah.
With as old as this story is, I'm not expecting, you know, the more, I guess, modern thing
Brandon
in fantasy.
Sanderson, yeah,
Brandon Sanderson style, where there are limitations on magic, and the magic gets very specific sometimes. Sometimes it's a little bit broader.
Yeah.
I mean, this was just, you know, whatever.
Magic.
Yeah, magic, yay. I wasn't expecting that.
No, I'd forgive this book for that.
But at the same time, there were times where they would do one spell after another, so it was like another little rhyme, just at one, and then another, and then another. I'm like, I'm so done with this. I'm so done with the rhyming and the songs.
Yeah, you know, I think of Merlin, I think of, you know, an old fantastic wizard and cool spells and an infinite knowledge. And while he did have that in this, for lack of a better term, and to be kind of punny, there just wasn't any magic in it for me.
I mean, it was supposed to be pure escapism. You know, for a classic, I feel like most classics survive on their messages and their themes.
Yeah.
And this one just didn't really have those. It was purely a King Arthur story. And maybe the later books get
into
a little bit
more.
Yeah, but this one just didn't.
Yeah, I from what I understand, the story of King Arthur is with this book, and I guess what it's supposed to be, and from watching the movie forever ago, the animated movie, I guess it's more about even like the lowest person on the totem pole can be king. I don't know. I mean, everyone has it in them kind of thing. I don't
know. Well, no, like this Arthur is the son of Uther Pendragon. Like it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
I don't know.
I don't either. That's how confused I am with this
series. Maybe, you know, you can be princely or kingly even when you're shoveling hay. I don't know. I guess you could force that message in there some.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. trying to find things to continue the conversation, but
like we said, this is going to be a little bit of a short one.
Yeah,
it reads like a short story collection more than anything else.
Yep.
I don't think I'll be continuing on with the series.
No.
So, and that makes me so sad because it's been sitting on my shelf forever. And I finally got around to reading it and was not impressed.
Oh, that's, we talked about it before the before last week. We were talking about what to read and you brought it up. I was like, King Arthur, cool. I know a little bit about King Arthur. I kind of know the story, but mm-hmm. I'm excited. I've seen the sword, was it the Quest to Camelot? You know
yeah.
that? I think I'll be into this. Nope, it's nothing like the Quest to Camelot.
I love the Merlin BBC yeah. series. It's yeah. the best. You know, yeah. I like a lot of King Arthur related stuff, but just not this one.
No, yeah. The original just doesn't hold up for me, unfortunately.
I don't even want to call this an original, because like I say, there are, the myth yeah, of King Arthur
I know the myth
of
King Arthur,
ways.
But I... Yeah.
This one specifically.
Yeah.
Not so much.
Not
so,
too much.
Sadly, not so good of a review.
Sorry.
But on a better note,
yes.
next week,
ooh.
We will be joined by the author of the book we reviewed last week. Last week, we reviewed One of Us. Craig DeLuey is going to be coming on for an interview with us. We're going to be recording that here pretty soon. And so that will be next week's episode.
Oh, and Lord. He's going to get on to us for mispronouncing his last name, isn't he?
I think we've done it right.
I think so.
I don't know how else it
but
could be
But we disagreed
done.
About it at the beginning of the last podcast.
Mm.
we're not disagreeing.
Anything in the email about
it. Well, hey, there we go. He's waiting to unleash on us. That's what,
it's
he's
what it is. That's what it is. That's why he's coming on.
So definitely go check out One of Us to read through the book and... you know, give us any, you know, get ready for it for the podcast.
Yeah, no,
out.
One of Us was fantastic.
It was.
Definitely read One of Us.
Yeah, if you haven't, go listen to that podcast, listen to our discussion about it, the themes and the things behind it.
Read all of the reviews. It's a book that doesn't pull any punches.
Yeah.
So I am definitely be ready for that.
Oh, yeah. And I'm definitely excited to talk to him because if that's the themes his book has, I'm interested to pick his brain. Mm-hmm. And talk to him about that kind of stuff. See how he thinks.
Absolutely. So,
yeah.
On that note, sorry for a little bit of a short episode this week. But definitely let us know what you thought. If you enjoy other King Arthur, if there are other King Arthur books, other books based on the legends of King Arthur that you think that we should read, let us know. We're on Facebook at Two Book Geeks. Or you can find us on our Facebook group, Book Geeks mm-hmm. Uncompromised. I'm on Twitter. All the time. At Book Geeks on at Book Geeks UNC. At Book Geeks UNC.
And don't forget about Audible as well. You can get that free 30 days and the free trial book. Like I said, you can go check out One of Us or Hitchhiker's Guide, like I recommended earlier.
Yes.
Both great options.
Hitchhiker's Guide is one of my favorites.
Is
I love it.
Definitely a good one. Funny movie, too. but yeah, that's audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc.
And on that note, everybody have a wonderful week. We will talk to you later.
See you next week.